In hindsight, do you think, looking back, you know, maybe having that mindset of, you know, I'm excited to be here, I got nothing to lose, like, was that what kind of, you know, drove you, and you think, like, leaded to playing really good?
I mean, I think for me personally, knowing that I didn't have the highest expectations going in, it made it so easy to enjoy everything about the tournament. Like, the second we got there, it was, for me, the whole player registration, you know, thing was so cool, because I'd never done it. I've never played in a USGA championship. And I'm just like, this is the coolest thing I've ever been a part of. Like, I've never had my name on the back of a caddy bib before. Like, for me, that was just like, it just felt surreal. It was incredible.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
All right, Jimmy Abdo joining us. It's Abdo, right? Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
And I should have said Himmy. Your nickname around Minnesota for a while was Himmy Abdo, as you were making your run. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but for everybody that's been wanting to hear your story that maybe hasn't already, it'd be awesome just get an intro on you, kind of what's changed, which I imagine is a lot over the last month or two. Hear a little bit about you, and then we'll kind of deep dive into your run at the USAM and all things on your golf game. So thank you for taking some time and coming on.
Yeah, it's fun. No, I've been watching you guys for a little bit now, so it's kind of cool to be a part of it.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, so let's start from the beginning. So you're an Edina kid, then you played at Gustavus. So let's talk through, because I was reading a bunch of articles on you. You kind of didn't like come in to be the golfer you are now until maybe like junior, senior year of high school, right? Like, it kind of took a little bit. So let's start from there.
Well, yeah, I mean, sadly to admit, I didn't even break 80 my freshman year of high school golf. And then sophomore year got a little bit better. Even then, still didn't make our starting lineup, which kind of sucks. But and then after that, I switched coaches and switched, you know, workout routines and started gaining a little bit of distance and speed, and started kind of realizing that I got to take a big jump if I wanted to play college golf. Because even at that point I was at, I don't know if I could have even played at the Division III level. I'd kind of been, you know, it's hard to play college golf when you're not even starting on your high school team. So after that, I took a really big jump. I averaged 77 my sophomore year. And then my junior year, I dropped it down to like a 70 to 71, I think it was. So that big jump kind of gave me the potential that I could play after high school. Even then, I still wanted to play Division I golf. That's always been a goal of mine. I think it's a goal of most guys that are playing high school or even below that. So didn't really get the looks my junior year, which was a little upsetting considering how well I thought I'd played that year. And then senior year, I played just as good, if not a little bit better. And even then, didn't really, I never really had a good chance to play at the Division I level. So I decided to reach out to Coach Mo at Gustavus, and I knew that I could play the Division III level and at least grow my game a little bit, and then maybe someone will notice it down the road. And then, so they gave me the opportunity to come here and play, and it's where I still am and very thankful for it.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. It's I like to think that over the last, I don't know how many handful of years, just competitive golf in general, like, so I'm 34, just for reference, and I went to Winona State, you know, D2 school. And thinking back to when I was in college, even just the level of like D2 golf compared to probably what it is now is just night and day. And so it'd be interesting to get your perspective on just like, you know, you're still kind of in it right now playing collegiate golf, but still looking at the level. And like, obviously when you went to the USAM, the level that kids can play at, even D1, D2, D3, or maybe kids that didn't even get a look, are able to play at is actually pretty phenomenal. Cause obviously you're an amazing player, right? So, you know, how do you guys battle? Like, do you guys talk about that, you know, just across the board of like the skill level there is in golf right now, whether you're playing at like the best D1 school or, you know, even just a D3 school in Minnesota?
Well, like, I mean, I think the first thing I said to my caddy, like, the second we got on site for our practice round, you just see all these names, like, guys that you recognize from everywhere. Like, we saw, I think we got to the punting green, and there was, like, the guys like Miles Russell, Tommy Morrison, Jackson Coyden, Ben James, and Ethan Fang. And I'm like, I don't think I've ever felt, like, worse about my golf game than rolling up to the putting green and guys are putting with GC quads. I'm like, it was just a totally different level than anything I'd ever been used to. Because most of the time, if I show up to a tournament, I'm, you know, kind of going there expecting to be one of the best players there. Knowing that I should compete, I can win and all that stuff. And then you get to a tournament like this and there's, I think they said 88 of the top 100 players in the world were at this tournament. And the kid I played with, his Niall Shields Donegan, he was like 93rd in Wagger. So like, I knew I had a really good group. And so it's just kind of like that, it's that realization of like, I mean, I think I'm good at golf. And then I show up to this tournament and there's seriously the best player in the world is the range stall right behind me. He just took fifth at the Wyndham on tour. And obviously, talking about Jackson Coyden, but I mean, yeah, like I warmed up to right in the stall right in front of him for my first round. And I mean, it's ridiculous how good that guy is. And to think that there's, you know, 80 other players that can hit the ball almost as well as he does. They're like probably about that far away. And knowing that I'm just kind of some Division III player that kind of had to grind just to even get into the tournament. These guys are all here on exemption. It was just almost like, I guess you could say, a little reality check that, I mean, I play at a very high level, I think. And then you show up to a tournament like this and these are the best golfers I'll ever see or play with, I think. So it was just kind of like a realization that I'm still a long ways away from being one of the best players.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people obviously followed along as you were, you know, getting past stroke play, getting into match play. But what gets lost, I think, in a lot of golf is how, you know, people actually get there, right? So where did you qualify and like what was the journey actually leading up? Because people don't really realize probably how difficult it is just to get into a tournament of that caliber.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I had to go through my first round of qualifying at Dakota Ridge out in Morton.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I'm
so I played Dakota Ridge. I played in, it actually might have been a US SAM or maybe it was a US local 2 years ago.
Yep, that sounds right.
I started on the back. I was actually playing really good and I lost a ball right on hole one, which was my hole 10. I missed by a couple strokes, but I probably didn't have a chance. I'm just trying to play more tournament golf. That's a long-winded way of saying, yes, I played Dakota Ridge.
Yeah, it's not the, I mean, it's, if the wind's not blowing, it's pretty scoreable. But so, I mean, I started out there on hole 10 also. And then, like hit like decent drive and started my day holing out from about like 122. And just kind of landed one right by the hole, spun it back. Good little birthday gift to start off the day. So then I kind of grinded that out, ended up shooting 68. So I got through that round of qualifying. And then, so my second stage was in Iowa, but kind of the issue with it was right over the state open. And I knew that if I play well in the state open, that's kind of a good look on my resume rather than, I mean, at that point, I'm like, if I go to the US Ham qualifier, I'm going to have to play my best golf to get in. And so I'm sitting, we played our first round. I was playing fine for a while and made a couple mistakes coming in. And we got to the range the second day. And I'm like, I think I should just go to this USAM qualifier. Like it's hard enough to get to the second stage already. I don't know if I'm going to get another opportunity like that. And so we played four holes the second day. And I was talking to my coach and I'm like, well, Coach Mo, I'm like, I don't know what to do. I think I should leave, go see the course before I play in this tournament, like get down there and get comfortable. And he could kind of tell that's where my heart and head was at, that I really wanted to give this a go. And I really thought I could make it. I was playing really good golf. And so we kind of agreed that it'd be smart if I just got down to Iowa, got good night's sleep and was just ready to go tomorrow. So after we played hole seven, I withdrew from the state open and we drove, me and my caddy, which was my cousin at the time, we drove down to Iowa and we were, you know, ready to go. We went and saw the golf course, did all of our work. And then next morning I started off, you know, there's a couple other guys from Minnesota in the field, Nate Stevens and Andrew Ramos. And they were, one of them was in the group ahead of me, but we didn't start off great there either. I mean, I almost three putted my first hole, made a bogey on the third, made a bogey on the fifth, I think. So I was two over through seven at that point. And I knew, I was like, all right, maybe I should have stayed at the state open. I don't know. But you know, I just kept seeing. I was like, you know, I can make a couple birdies and at least give myself a chance. And so I made birdie on eight, finished the front nine, one over. And we got to 10, made a really good par on 10. And I birdied 11, 12, and 13 right after that. 11, 12, 13. And then, so now I was, you know, at two under and made some really grindy pars to get in. I got up and down from, I mean, absolutely short-sighted on 17, made a long one on 14 for par. So I was kind of like just lucky to get into the playoff. I made a two putt from probably 60 feet on 18 just to get there, made a little slider. And then, so we went back to hole 17, and that's probably the hardest hole on the golf course for the playoff. It's 480 from the tip, so you can't hit driver because you run out of fairway. And I mean, I absolutely laid the sod on the two iron off the tee. And then in the first round, I had 185 in. Second round, I had 245 in.
Two iron.
So
maybe two iron, four
yeah,
iron.
Two iron. No, I went two iron. Threw a little into the wind, went over the green. And I was like, oh God, like I just absolutely sold this. I was so upset. But then one guy in our group made bogey, and I knew if I get up and down, that worst, I'm going to have one more hole to try to get into this thing. So I hit what I thought was an absolutely terrible chip, probably at about 15, close to 20 feet. And so I made that one to extend it. And as we go to the last hole, I push driver straight into the fescue. And I'm like, once again, I'm like, well, you know, it was fun. I got into the playoff. Maybe an alternate will get in. Well, I had to lay up out of the fescue, and another kid had spun his down the false front. So he kind of had a tough up and down. I had to get up and down for 50 yards. And so I hit one, knew I couldn't leave it short because of the false front and the bunker. So I hit it kind of safe, another 18 feet past the hole, and end up making that one again. And the kid missed his up and down. So that's kind of how I got into the AM. Was just, I mean, it was stress from hole one to my 18th hole of the day, and then the two playoff holes. So it was an absolute grind. So, I mean, I was like, I was pretty emotional after it because I was just like, that was such a roller coaster. I was, you know, way over par after seven holes. It was way out of it and grind my way back into it. And, you know, suddenly we were booking flights to San Francisco.
Yeah, I was going to say, those are the things that people don't either hear about or comprehend, like how to just get to the tournament, and like literally it comes down to inches or a couple of feet just to get into a playoff, and then, you know, beat some guys to actually get in and then go on the run that you go on. And just like, you know, thinking about competitive golf for a second, you know, we like to talk a little bit more in depth on the pod about competitive golf, tournament golf, and it's something I really need to take a step in moving forward. But just like the mental fortitude that it takes at pretty much every level of the game to like stay in it and like always have a look at par, you know, try to be putting for par, you know, just know that you can always make like a few birdies to get back in it. Like that's the type of stuff that I look at and go, that's what separates the guys that like got it and can get to the next level. And then maybe the guys that kind of flounder out and just rely on their, you know, hopefully having their best stuff for the day or whatever it might be.
Yeah, it's just like it's more like you take a bigger toll on your mind than your body. After the USAM, I was just, I mean, mentally drained. I couldn't even think of like the most simple, like just most simple things. So I was like, I've used all my brain power these last 7 days. Now the tournament's over. I don't have to stress anymore, but now I'm absolutely shot. It took me probably another day and a half after we got home to just finally get back to like feeling normal again. It was so tolling. And by the end of it, I was like, I don't have anything left in me. Like if I was still in the tournament, the adrenaline would just keep me going. But I mean, I think in that last match, it eventually ran out. It'd been such an emotional week for us, just with, I mean, the fact that I was even there, and then how I got into the playoff to get into match play, and then match play itself is just, I mean, it's so hard. especially on a course like that where the smallest mistake could cost you a lot. And by the time we were done, I was like, I need a little break. I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to like eat it. I don't want to drink anything. Just give me a minute. I probably sat down in that locker room for another 20 minutes, just like letting myself settle down.
Well, like aside from the golf, I mean, what was the experience like, right? Like obviously you went on an awesome run. For people who don't know, you know, you start in the field, you got to get through stroke play. And basically, I believe it's 64 golfers, right? You kind of go into imagine a March Madness tournament of a match play format golf until there's a winner. But, you know, removing all the golf stuff aside from it, what was just the experience like in a place like that? Like you said, being around, you know, a bunch of your peers that are some of the best golfers in the world, you know, at that age. I imagine there's like a lot of, you know, cooler stuff and like sides to the game that you see. I imagine there's a bunch of sponsors there and probably like tour trucks and vans there. Like, is there any of that stuff that maybe we don't see that's behind the scenes, you know, for your week? And then as you're advancing, I imagine more people are coming up to talk to you and all that type of stuff too. You know, what's that like? Yeah.
It was, once again, it was just kind of like that. It felt like a dream moment where, by the time I'd gotten to, you know, a little later in the match play, most of the people there were kind of on my side. And I thought that was great. It made my experience better. But besides that, I had a really good group of people with me. My caddy is one of my good friends from middle school. We played golf together. One of our assistant coaches was there, and he booked his flight, his tickets to the tournament, and his hotel the day I qualified. So he was pretty excited to get going. And then my parents were there, my brother, and he came with, and he brought his girlfriend with him too. So we had, I mean, even our own little group was just so special, and everyone there made it an incredible experience. And I mean, even that first match against Logan Riley, you can hear some cheers, and it's only coming from my brother. I knew it's him immediately just because of his voice, and he claps louder than anyone. But it was just kind of like the little things like that. And we met some really cool people along the way. Like I was talking about Niall earlier. I played both my stroke play rounds with him and then played my playoff with him. We were just rooting for each other the entire week. I got to play with John Daly in the practice round.
Oh, that's cool.
It was really fun. And then the second day I played with Michael Lissasso. So I just had, like, I kind of tried to take advantage of the entire experience because, you know, at the time, I'm not thinking I'm going to play another USAM. I was kind of like, this is going to be once and, you know, at most, this will happen two or three times in my life. So I was like, I'm just going to try to enjoy it as much as possible. You know, obviously try to play my best golf, but if not, I want to make it a great experience. And I think that's how it ended. I mean, even though I lost and obviously didn't want to lose, I couldn't have had a better experience as a whole.
Yeah, I want to kind of dive into the mental side of things here, because obviously, you know, to do what you did, the game is there. And, you know, I would like to think a lot of golfers at your skill level, you know, people can get hot and go on a run. But what it takes is that kind of mental fortitude, right? Like in hindsight, do you think looking back, you know, maybe having that mindset of, you know, I'm excited to be here, I got nothing to lose. Like, was that what kind of, you know, drove you? And you think like leaded to playing really good, as opposed to maybe somebody, you know, I'm not going to call out Miles, or, you know, maybe somebody with, call it higher expectations playing, you know, has pressure, yeah. Right? I mean, as you look at all that in hindsight, what are your thoughts on that and how it maybe helped or hurt or was indifferent for your level of play?
I mean, I think for me personally, knowing that I didn't have the highest expectations going in, it made it so easy to enjoy everything about the tournament. Like the second we got there, it was, for me, the whole player registration, you know, thing was so cool because I'd never done it. I've never played in a USGA championship. But like to these other guys that have been there before, it's just like, okay, yeah, we're going to grab this. We're going to go to our locker. We've done this. And I'm just like, this is the coolest thing I've ever been a part of. Like, I've never had my name on the back of a caddy bib before. Like, for me, that was just like, it just felt surreal. It was incredible. So I think part of that, having low expectations, allowed me to play good golf. I could just go play free, and I knew I was going to enjoy it no matter what happened. And it was going to be an amazing experience. And then, I mean, it was, I miss it. Like, I miss how much fun that whole tournament was. And I knew, and I think I said it before every match to my caddy, like as soon as we hit our first tee shot, we're walking. I said it a couple times, like, no matter what happens in this match, this is by far the best experience of my golf career. Like, I'm not going to say I don't care that I lost, but it didn't hurt that bad. Because I knew that just to get to the point I was at was enough for me to be satisfied. I mean, obviously, I wanted to win the tournament. I wanted to try to get into the Masters and all that. But I mean, I surpassed my expectations by so much that it was hard to be disappointed.
Well, so do you get exempt into next year then, making it to, did you get to the Elite Eight, right?
Yeah, I got to the quarterfinal, so I'm back in the field at Marion already next year. Yeah,
so that's awesome, right? Like, you know, you get to go do it all over again and now have hopefully another kind of greatest experience of your golf career, and you'll be that guy that shows up like, oh, yeah, I've done this before. Yeah. I got my name on the caddy
bib.
And
that was part of the reason why I left the state open, because I'm like, I don't know if I'll ever have a chance to be in a final qualifier again. But now looking after it, I'm just like, well, I guess I didn't really need to be at the qualifier next year. Like, it's little things like that. And I still go back and watch all the videos and look at all the pictures just because it was, I don't know if I want to say it was the best moment of my life, but it was definitely right up there with it. I mean, it's just not much you can do. It's very rare you get that type of thrill in golf. Like, it happens often, but I mean, even like if I come back and I'm playing at these tournaments in Gustavus, it's fun. I love to compete, and I'm not, saying that this, playing Division III golf is bad, but those tournaments are once a year, and there's very few guys that get to experience what I experience. So it's just like that whole thrill and excitement and the pressure, like, you don't get that too often in golf. So it's kind of like, it feels like I'm just like missing it a little bit. I can't wait to get back to something like that.
Yeah, you'll get to go back again next year, but it's a lot of the same. I mean, hear the exact same things from, the guys at every level. Like right now, obviously the Ryder Cup is coming up, and we just had the Walker Cup, and you hear guys say the same thing, right? It's like, you don't know if you'll ever get back here. You don't know if it'll be your first or your last or whatever it might be. And it's hard to replicate. Yeah. That feeling, and there's obviously that at different levels, and so I can't even imagine the type of thrill you get. And I'd be curious to hear what was the first tee shot like, right? Like, whether it's stroke play or it's like the first tee shot of each match play, and does that kind of change your approach now when you go to these tournaments? And do you feel like you're going to be freed up a little bit more as you play, knowing like, hey, this tournament, it isn't ever going to be like what my nerves were standing on the tee in the quarterfinals or the semifinals at the USA, and I could play free, right? Like,
yeah.
Is there something to that? Like, I'm genuinely curious.
I mean, for me, I started on the late course, and that was the most intimidating first tee shot I've ever had. I mean, it's 530 yards, and the fairway is about the width of this room. So it was just like, but surprisingly, I wasn't nervous. I was just like, it was once again that mindset of I'm just happy to be here. So I think that's what just made it slightly easier until I realized that I'm in the thick of it, and this is, I'm one of the last eight guys here. But until I got to that point, there wasn't really any nerves. It was mostly just excitement. It was more just like, I mean, I can't believe I'm here. I can't wait to do this. Yeah, it's going to be amazing. So, I mean, part of the nerves wasn't really that big of a thing for me. I kind of used it more as motivation to like, this is such an amazing opportunity to play some golf and get my name recognized a little bit that, there's no need to put any extra pressure on myself. There's, 140 guys already in the field with pressure on them. And I'm, way down here below everyone else, and no one's really expecting much from me. So I knew that I could use that to my advantage. If you hit a bad shot for guys that are, expected to be one of the top 20 seeds, they make a double, it's like, oh God, I got to get back to this. Otherwise, I'm not going to meet my expectations. But for me, our first goal going in was to kind of have some fun. And then once I saw the course and felt comfortable, I'm like, we could, I mean, I want to make it to match play. I don't think it's very unrealistic. And then the first time I really felt pressure and felt like I really had to dig deep was after my first round. So I'd played well at the late course, shot 72 out there, which for me, I'm going to be pretty happy about that out there. And then we got to the next day and we're kind of thinking where we think the cut line's going to be. And we knew that to start the day, I was definitely inside the cut line. But it didn't drop as far back as we thought it would. So I made a couple bad bogeys on the start of our back nine of the ocean course. And now I was 6 over par for the tournament and the cut line was 3. And I was like, that was the first kind of moment where I'm like, I got it. Like, yeah, exactly. I'm like, let's go though. And I have my own goal. I want to meet it. Let's at least go down swinging. And then birdied 4 and 5 on the late course back to back, which for us was our back nine. So it would have been, 13, 14?
Yep.
And then made a couple pretty grindy pars coming in. And Niall and I were both sitting on our 18th tee thinking, like, him and I were both at 4 over at that point. And we both had the birdie to get in the match play. So we both hit great drives. We had to wait forever because someone was in our fairway trying to get back into the other fairway. So I'm like, okay, I got to think about this 115-yard wedge for 10 extra minutes now. And I'm like, I just want to hit this golf ball. Like, I know I feel comfortable now. I don't want to wait any longer. But I had to find a way to relax a little bit. And Niall had hit one in there to about 8 feet. And then I hit what I, at that point, was the best shot of the tournament for me. I was on a kind of an awkward lie to a left pin and knew that I can't hit this at the middle of the green. I'm not giving myself a 20-footer. It either has to be tight or I'm going to have to chip in. That was kind of where I was at. I knew I didn't have anything to lose, so I hit best shot of the tournament, ended up probably just inside 6 feet. And Niall made his putt to get in the match play, and then I made mine on top of him. And kind of going back to that whole experience part of it, it was like, small thing like that people don't see was we both birdied our playoff hole, our last hole to get into the playoff. And then the worst night of sleep I ever got was that night waiting to play in the playoff the next
morning. Oh, you guys had to wait. You couldn't get to play. You didn't play right after because there's so many players.
We didn't get done till about 7 or 5.
Oh, wow.
And we weren't the last group either.
Wow. So what? Because it was like it was a pretty high number, right? Like 20
for 17.
Yeah. So 20 guys had to sleep. Yeah. And then if you ended up getting in, did you immediately go to match play the next day as well?
Yeah, you played the playoff and if you got in that
match that day.
Wow.
So they told us it was going to be, we thought it was going to be 1 on the late course, which par 5 converted to a par 4, tough hole, anything can happen. And then they told us we're switching it to 1 on the ocean course, which is now 530-yard par 5 turned into a par 4 with a bunker you have to carry to have a decent shot.
And it didn't play as a par 4 all tournament, right? They're like, we're just going to make it a par 4.
No, it was the entire tournament.
Oh, it was. Okay, so they didn't just do it for the play. Okay.
No. Well, I mean, it kind of wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's a shot's a shot. But just kind of like thinking of it as a par 4 is tough considering it starts with a 5. But... And then I was like thinking about that tee shot all night. I mean, I couldn't sleep. I maybe got 4 hours, 5 hours of sleep that night at most. And I'd been in bed since 10 o'clock. We didn't have to get up till, 7:30. So I couldn't sleep thinking about it. And that was the kind of first moment I realized that this is what big tournaments are like. Where it's like, I don't think I was the only guy worrying about that tee shot that night. I can almost guarantee I wasn't. But and then we get there in the morning and they're like, well, there's actually a lot of fog coming in on the ocean course. So we're going to go play 9 on the lake course. And I'm just like,
So they changed it 3 times
about
though?
A tee shot. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So now I'm stressed about a tee shot I didn't have to hit. Nice. That's great. But 9 and 10 were, I'd been playing those holes well. So I knew if I probably went par, I'd get in. So I made, I two-putted from probably about 50 feet on the first playoff hole. And a little scary to start off your morning at 8 o'clock. But, and then we went to 10, and we're now, since
the first group tees off, they finish the hole, and they have to wait for the last group in the playoff to be done before they can go to the next hole. So, like, the group, a couple groups ahead of me was Mason Howell's group. So we watched them tee off, and then we had to wait probably about 40 minutes to hit another ball. And I'm like, my caddy, Evan, and I were like, right, we're just going to go for a quick, go walk around a little bit, just not watch other people play the same hole that we have to for the same reason. So we just took a little bit of a walk, and then we saw some guy in the group ahead of us made a six. So we're like, all right, we can make a five, get in, but we want a better seed than the 64 seed. So let's just keep doing what we've been doing. Use the straightest club in the bag, which was driver at that point. We hit driver, hit wedge, two putt par. We're in the playoff. And then you kind of feel relaxed for a little bit. And then you see who you're playing in an hour. And then the stress builds up again. So it's just like this whole week is such an emotional roller coaster. Like, even when you win a match, you're happy. Once you settle down, you're like, I have to play again tomorrow. So it's like you have very little time to really enjoy the tournament that you can't. It's hard to think about the tournament until it's over.
Sure. Well, it's interesting and opportune time to talk a little bit about match play with like the Ryder Cup coming up and like a lot of tournaments right now. I'd say at the end of like Minnesota Golf, whether they're members or, like we do a deal versus Hazeltine, the Mat Cup, like a lot of it's, you know, match play, best yeah. ball. How different do you approach match play versus stroke play? Like, obviously there's differences, right? But like, just from a mental perspective, I'm curious, you know, and maybe you talk about this with other guys that were there or whatever. Like, do you approach it any differently? And if so, like, what do you change?
The biggest change for me was kind of throwing par out the window. That it doesn't matter if you tie the hole with a three or a six. It counts the same. So for me, it was starting to realize that I'm done playing. I'm not playing against 311 other guys now. It doesn't matter what Tommy Morrison shoots today because it doesn't affect me at all. So we had to kind of stop looking at scores and looking at other guys because it was really irrelevant to what we were doing. Where versus stroke play, it's like you need to know where the cut line is. You need to know how many holes this guy has left, what position you're going to finish in. So we kind of changed the mindset of we're going to try to, you know, manage it well versus we're going to be aggressive. We're here to win. We want to win everything we possibly can. And we got matched against Logan Riley in the first round, he was a standout golfer as a 2025 grad. He's going to play at Auburn next year. And I knew that it was going to be tough for me to win, especially as a 61 seed playing a four seed. I mean, most people are chalking that up as Logan's probably going to smoke me. Which, I mean, I understand. I mean, I was kind of in that same mindset where I'm like, I'm probably going to have to play some of my best golf to take this guy down. And so we're standing on the first tee. Maybe first time ever I've really been nervous over a tee shot. I mean, I've played match play before, but I've never played it on a stage like this. But it was a really nice way to start the match. I made birdie on one, which is, like I said, 530-yard par four. So you can almost count it as an eagle because it's a par five.
Yeah. You hit two really good shots and probably made a really good putt to do it.
Yeah, I did. But he dead pulls his tee shot on that first hole, has to chip it out, chips it out to like 200 yards, hits it to 20 feet. And I'm maybe just outside of him. I make mine for birdie. And then I'm walking off the green. I turn around. He made his for par. Just like a practice putt. I'm like, okay, so this isn't going to be easy. He just made the most ridiculous par I've seen this entire tournament. So I knew it was going to be an absolute grind. And I knew that, once again, par is irrelevant. If I make a seven, it counts as if I made a five to his four. It doesn't matter. I knew obviously the underdog in that situation. So I knew I could be aggressive and go at everything. And so I'd won the first two holes. I obviously felt pretty comfortable. And we both hit it in the greenside bunker on three. And he went first. He holes out his bunker shot. And I'm like, all right, well, that sucks. Good win for him. But so we go to the next hole. I lose it again, made a terrible bogey. And then we go to five. He chips in for birdie again. And I'm just like, well, that's it. it's been a fun tournament. It's, they don't want me to win today, but we got, I mean, we got two down in that match. And that was, again, that roller coaster where you get a little down and you're like, well, I mean, two down against a guy this good, it's probably not going to happen, but we'll put up a fight and see whatever, you know, see what we can do. And that's where I took a little bit of the pressure off myself and knew that let's see what we can do. There's no need to put any extra pressure. I know I can make birdies. And then we both birdied 14. I birdied 15 to win the hole. So we got to, that was to get the match all square, birdying 15. I birdied 16. He made par, won that hole to go to one up, and we both birdied 17.
Wow, just a birdie fest. So I had birdied,
that was my sixth birdie of a match, and I was only one up. And I hadn't really made a lot of mistakes. I think I was two under going into that hole. So I was playing good golf. And then we get to 18, and that's kind of where that realization hit me that these are the moments you dream of. You're on the biggest stage in golf. You're playing against a guy that should beat you. And you have a chance to close them out, and it's a story. It's an entire story that's made out of it. And, oh, God, yeah, I mean, I sprayed two iron off the tee. That wasn't ideal. And he striped his. And then I was out of the rough, hit it, lands into the upslope on 18, and just sticks into the rough right on top of the bunker. And he goes right on his. And then, once again, we get up to the green. I told my caddy, I'm like, this is another moment I dream of, a clutch up and down to win the match and move on in a big stage like this. And I hit what I thought was arguably my best short game shot of the week. My feet were in the bunker and the ball was on top of the bunker. And so I knocked him up to about 8 feet and he hit his just inside of mine. And I said it again after the match. I'm like, this is another thing that I've always dreamed of, is having a really clutch 8-footer down the hill to beat a guy. And when I made that putt, and then, you know, I got maybe a little too excited, but it was just such a cool moment for me. And then on top of that, I was like, well, I just accomplished something I never saw happening, was winning a match in the USAM. And then so you get that excitement, and then the mentality is, all right, we have to settle down because that's over. Nothing about that match should affect our next match. And then we got back in that mode of, all right, we're back out. We're out to kill now. I know I can do it. And this guy, I'm not saying he's a worse player, but he had a lower seed, and that gave me more confidence that I beat a top 4 player from stroke play in this tournament. That now I feel like I can beat the entire
field. Yeah, you could beat anybody if you could beat the 4 seed.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I didn't play my best golf, but I played my best match in the second one, where I just made a lot of pars, grinded it out, didn't really give him an inch. And then closed, I think his name was Wolfgang, we closed him out 4-3. And so now we get a long break until our next match. And I found out who I was playing, and it's Daniel Savard. And we knew that he's a, you know, 2-time Big Ten champion now. The guy's 6'8". He speaks Swedish when he's on the golf course. Probably the most intimidating player, yeah, besides a guy like Tommy Morrison that's in the field.
6'8", sweet guy that probably just hits it, you know, a mile off the tee.
Yeah, he was past me by about 30 to 40.
Wow.
And I think I hit it a decent amount. Like on the second hole, he outdrove me by 20 with a 3-wood. Yeah. So then I had to settle down a little bit after the Wolfgang match, and we didn't even play a par 5. That's how well I thought I'd played that round, where we didn't even need to get past the 15th hole. I finished birdie again to close him out. So I knew that where I was at, there was no one in the field that should have had more confidence than me. Because all these guys have the high expectations that if they win a couple matches, it doesn't really change much for them. But for me, if I win a couple matches, I feel like I'm only going to get better from there. And then I think besides Harrington, I think Savard was the best test I had that whole week. Once again, just because of how intimidating he was. And I'm just like this little 5'8" guy that thinks he hits the ball far. And then there's a guy that I shook hands with, my hand was up here. And he was
I mean, he was just, his game was awesome. I mean, I was like 14, I was made an ace in the round of 16, and then he buried a 25 footer to tie the hole. And then you go back to what you were talking about at the start, was there's just levels. And that once I kept winning and kept going in this tournament, I realized that these guys are just better. Each guy is just better and better and better. And there's something about each of their games that's so unique that they master this one thing and they rely so heavily on it that they're not concerned with anything else in their game. Because like Harrington, he hit the ball a lot of places, but he made par from everywhere. And he relied on his short game from everywhere, that if he missed a green, he wasn't concerned at all. Where it's, I trust my short game, but if I missed a green, I'm like, it's going to be really good to make a par here. Where he was like, oh, I missed a green, I'm short-sighted, that's fine, I'll hit a wedge to 8 feet and make par. And so I think that's kind of where they separated themselves, is they had one part of their game that was better than anyone else in the field. Like Jackson Koivun's the best iron player I've ever seen. And Harrington, probably one of the best short games I've ever seen. Because the rough is, once again, 6 inches. It's deep. It's, you're short-sighted everywhere. All the greens are firm. He just found a way to make a par from everywhere. And where I was sometimes in position and I hit a bad shot and I couldn't recover as well as these guys. And that's where we were like from here to about there. And that's, I mean, it sucks to admit, I just couldn't keep up in that final match. He didn't hit the ball any better than I had all week. But I made bogey when I should have made par, and he made par when he should have made bogey. And then that's where you end up, you know, you got a birdie every hole coming in to somehow tie the match. And that's just where those guys separate themselves.
Well, so, I mean, yeah, obviously you learned a ton, and like it's really interesting to hear it, right? And hear their perspective. And now moving forward, it's, you know, whether it's, you know what you got to work on, or, you know that you need to, maybe it's enhance whatever strength it is in your game. You know, I would imagine this is going to be what you're really looking forward to, you know, next year. Obviously, you got probably a lot to look forward to with college golf and whatever else, but I imagine that's going to be a week that you circle on the calendar. What are you going to focus on? What are you going to work on? You know, shout out to our guys at Empower. I think you worked Benoit a little bit, like, you know, at your level, and then knowing what it takes to get there and probably realizing what it takes to get further. You know, how are you structuring everything this next year? I imagine it's probably a little bit different than maybe what it was last year.
Yeah. So me and my trainer, Chris Blanco from Empower, we put a strong focus on endurance. Because it's such a long week. It's tolling. It's the hilliest golf course I've ever played. It's the hardest walking course I'll ever play. So I knew that condition was going to take me to the next level. So we started doing a lot of that. And then I think that's kind of what took me to the point where I got to the match in the round 16 and I still felt good. I hadn't really felt beat down at all. And then I think by the end of the Harrington match, I was kind of out of gas. And I know that for next year, the biggest improvement I'm trying to make is maintaining good golf for that long. I think, sadly, that I got a little bit worse every match. One area of my game seemed to fall out every match. And in the one against Jackson Harrington, I couldn't hit a green to save my life. I lost the driver a little bit, which had been my most reliable club all year. So if you look at a guy like Mason Howell, and he kept getting better throughout the tournament, which was the total opposite of what I was doing. And then you see at the end of it, he's the one lifting the trophy. And all those guys that made it to the quarterfinals and the finals, that they just never lost it. And for me, that kind of hurts to admit a little bit, that I wasn't, you know, ready to go for 8 days. Because I was mostly thinking that this is going to be a 3-4 day trip at most. And that's kind of what I look back on. That's a little upsetting for me, is that I lost the way I did. And to me, the way I lost was I lost my game a little bit just because I was so run down. And that's, it's hard to admit, but it's you got to be able to maintain it. And the guys that do are the ones that win. And Howell's an amazing, you know, example of that. He beat the best names in golf from start to finish, and he never, you know, he never lost it for more than a hole. Because, I mean, every time, I think until maybe about like later in the match, but in that Harrington match where those two were playing each other in the final, as soon as he lost the hole, he immediately won the next one. And to me, that tells me that if he loses the hole, he's got enough in him. He's got enough energy to just push for, and he's going to get it back away.
It's like Scotty when he bogeys his like birdie rate the next hole is something ridiculous.
Yeah, he'll birdie his next three.
Yeah.
Like it's the guys that can do that. They can bounce back because they're so fresh that late in the tournament.
It's a hard thing to learn, but once you get it, I think once I figure out how to do that, I'll be good to go. And I think next year my goal is a little bit bigger than it was this year. Just knowing that I can compete with those guys and there's really no reason for me to feel inferior. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm going to put my focus for the next 11 months.
Well, it's a good place to put it, man. And I think I speak on behalf of all Minnesota golfers and people that followed your story. It was just awesome accomplishment. And you know, you get to go back and try and do it all over again next year and make it even further. So it's going to be awesome to follow along, and really appreciate you sharing your story, the journey, and I imagine there's going to be a lot more for us to look forward to. So it's been really,
thank you,
Alfred. Yeah, really, really great having you on, and we're going to have to, we talked about bringing you out to the North Course now that Winsong's got it open. So whether it's later this fall or, you know, next spring, we'll absolutely have to go back and do it. And in the meantime, I'm sure I'll see you in Power.
Awesome. Yeah. Sounds good.
Thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate it, man.
Yep. Thank you. I appreciate it.